Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. Welcome to Primal Live. I'm your host, Jody Dighton, and I'm joined by two guests today. I've got my co-host, Paul Deitch.
Hello.
And I also have functional nutritionist, Christine Bailey. So welcome, guys. Lovely to have you.
Hi. Hi, Jody.
We're all looking very festive today.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course.
Festive. It's lovely to see. So let me tell you guys a little bit about everybody. So I've got Paul with me. Paul is my co-host today, and he's going to be our moderator. So he'll be watching all your questions come through and making sure that we are answering anything that you guys want to know. And I'm very pleased to have Christine with us, who is a very well-known, acclaimed functional nutritionist who can answer all of our questions and hopefully shed some light on some of our questions that we have and what's going to be happening, hopefully coming into the new year, and how we can start the new year better and brighter than we finished this one. So, as I say, welcome everybody. So, Christine, let's start with you. For everybody, this is our episode one. So this is our first official Primal Live chat. Can you tell everybody a little bit about yourself? Because I always talk about you within the shop.
Oh, that's very sweet, Jodie. And wow, what a privilege to be on the first episode. Fantastic. I mean, I know we've obviously met and I brought my kids down to the cafe, which of course they love. But just to give people a little bit of background about myself, I'm a qualified nutritional therapist with BSc's, master's, and I'm also trained with the Institute of Functional Medicine. And that's why I think you mentioned the word functional, as in functional nutrition, functional medicine. And I'm author of about 13 books, including ones on functional medicine and also paleo eating and obviously gut healing as well. And I'm a trained chef, so it's quite nice to have the background combination of nutrition and food. And so one of the key things I do is actually give people opportunities to come on cookery days, whether it's hands-on days, and we've got one for children in February, which is a hands-on days for them, or whether it's a demo or combination. The idea really is to sort of give people more ideas that are simple, quick and easy, but also addressing the underlying imbalances that might be causing the health problems. And that really is part of what a functional nutritionist would be about.
Okay. Just for people who aren't aware, how does that differ if I was to go see a dietitian?
Well, it's probably best just to say what is functional medicine. So functional medicine, probably quite a lot of people listening in probably would have heard about the Institute of Functional Medicine, which is based in the USA. They train people all over the world now and have their own clinics. But what it aims to do is address the underlying causes of disease. So it's looking at what are your imbalances going on which contribute to the signs and symptoms you are experiencing now. So, for example, say just a general thing, headache. You know, if we've got a headache, we'll probably just take, a Nurofen or something just to try and, you know, dull the symptom. That's not really addressing the underlying cause. And what we know from the research and functional medicine and functional nutrition is very based on evidence-based scientific research. What we know, for example, with migraines or headaches, is that there can be numerous reasons why. So for some people, there's an imbalance in calcium and potassium and magnesium. For other people, there's a hormonal imbalance. For other people, it's high histamine foods. For some people, it's gluten. So there's a lot of different reasons that can contribute to your current health issue. And by addressing the underlying imbalances, you will find resolution longer term, rather than saying, oh, I've got to now take some more medication.
Yeah.
And actually, worldwide, when you look at the figures, it's quite startling. When you look at the figures of what contributes to a lot of the deaths in the world, yes, of course, we've got heart disease, we've got cancer, but prescription medication is up there in the top five. So people abusing medication or taking it wrongly, or maybe contraindications of two or three different medications, actually contribute to death. So, you know, medication should not be taken lightly. And the idea is that someone who's trained in functional, nutritional functional medicine, we spend time with patients. We often will spend half an hour, an hour with patients listening to their whole health story. How have you got to the position you've got to now? So a culmination of things that have happened in your life throughout your life can contribute to the current health issues that you now have. And how can we address that long term? And that's really what functional medicine and functional nutrition is about. And we need it because our society is now experiencing a massive increase of complex chronic disease. So diabetes, heart disease, cancer, mental illness, autoimmune disorders. And, you know, our system of medicine is just not able to cope because it's not preventative and it's not addressing the underlying causes. So going back to your question, dietitians and nutritionists are different and nutritional therapists are different. Dietitians at the moment, although we're pushing for this, are the only statutory regulated body in terms of diet and nutrition. Unfortunately, at the moment, nutritional therapists haven't any statutory regulation. We are pushing for it. And so if you want to see a nutritionist or a nutritional therapist, please ask them, are they a member of BANT, which is the British Association of Nutritional Therapists? They must be.
Okay.
Are they a member of the CNHC? Now, this is the government's regulatory body.
Okay.
And this is really important. So CNHC, the Complementary Natural Healthcare Council, you should be regulated. If they are not, please do not see them because they are clearly not fully trained or regulated. And that's really important.
That you see out there that are like certificates and month-long courses and year-long online courses that people come out classifying themselves as functional or not, or nutritional therapists.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why we are pushing for proper regulation. That the sooner this happens, the better.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would want to know, have you got a degree?
Yeah.
In nutrition, obviously, because I might have a degree in something else. You know, what insurance have you got? What authority, what regulatory bodies are you a member of?
Okay.
You know, ask all these questions because you need to make sure that you've got someone who spent 4 or 5 years real training.
Yeah.
In order to get, you know, that expertise you need. Because your diet and obviously supplementation can have a profound effect on your body.
Yeah.
Don't just think it's, oh, it doesn't really matter. It does. It has a profound effect.
No.
And you need to know someone who really understands that.
And are you likely to, you probably work with quite a few doctors, but I imagine the doctors you work with will probably be taking a functional approach to medicine already.
So yeah, absolutely. I mean,
local doctor surgery, like where we are based in Bagshot, if I use my local doctor surgery, I don't think there's probably, I hope I'm wrong in saying this, I don't imagine there's many of the doctors in there that really are trained in functional medicine and that practice it. How do you get your doctor on board, or what is the way to get this approach integrated into your life then?
That's a very good question. Fortunately, more and more are becoming trained. So every year, every 2 or 3 years, the IFM, the team from the IFM fly over
to
the... the Institute of Functional Medicine,
okay.
they will fly over, and I'm part of the team that help organize these trainings, and they run intensive training for practitioners. So that could be nutritionists that haven't got a functional training. It could be GPs. It could be specialist consultants. And we had one earlier this year, and actually there were quite a substantial number of doctors on board. Really nice to see. We actually also get doctors flying over from other European countries wanting to take the functional approach as well. So, you know, if there's any doctors out there listening, please contact NutriLink, who pretty much organise all the IFM training here in the UK. Funnily enough, I'm actually flying over to the IFM next year to actually help them do some cookery presentations to doctors out there. Which is fantastic. So it's growing, and the IFM are actually also going over to China now to train doctors in China. So if they can do it over there, we can certainly do it over here.
Is it based in, I guess, is it based in America?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
We always don't know why. We always seem to be just that little bit slower on the uptake, but it comes eventually. We're getting there. We're definitely getting there.
We are. And I think that the same issues that are facing America in terms of their healthcare crisis, all right, they don't have the NHS, but we are facing the same. You know, this acute care approach, which is really what the NHS have practiced, it's acute care, it's, you know, reactive, is simply not helping people get healthy. We are a nation of people who are less healthy than we were, more obese, more problems with diabetes, more problems generally with mental health and cancer and so on. So what we're doing at the moment is not working. And, you know, there is a big gap as well between the research and the way doctors practice and the way, you know, other people practice. You know, there seems to be this big time lag between something comes up in the research and yet for that to sort of filter through. Take gluten, for example. You know, we've known for a long time that you don't just have to be a celiac to have a problem with gluten.
Yes.
Now we know the research absolutely supports this. You know, they recognize non-celiac gluten sensitivity as a health condition. Now that's filtering through, finally. But, you know, there's still this lack of, there's this big gap between what the research is showing and what we actually do in practice. And that needs to change.
But you know what else is changing? Because it's not just at the doctor's surgery and things that we're seeing these changes and that. We are becoming much more, you know, the younger generations are coming up and we are taking our health into our own hands much more readily.
Yeah.
You know, we run to the doctors nearly as quickly as we used to because, first of all, you have such a short period of time to see them. Mm-hmm. Like, and you have such a good idea of what you're going in with to be able to come out with the answer that you need. So I think a lot of us walk in there either already knowing what we're going in with or kind of past the point where we can do anything. We've exhausted all of our resources. And I do think that is a way that we're starting to move. And I think it's going to be happening more and more is people really are looking for almost going back to naturopathic, homeopathic medicine, aren't we? We are looking to find different ways because the way that we've been doing it is obviously not working.
That's absolutely right. And I think also there is more research to suggest the role that what you eat can have on your health. And also exercise, a sense of community, you know, all of those other areas can have such a profound effect on our overall health and the expression of our health. And certainly food can, you know, we know now can switch on genes and switch off genes, and what we eat can affect our gut, which can affect the levels of beneficial bacteria, which now have been shown to affect how we can put on weight and they can affect our mood. So we're finding out so much more about the importance of sense of community, interacting with people, exercise, spending time outdoors, eating the right foods, you know, eating unprocessed foods. And, you know, that gives us a much more of an empowerment to do something about our own health. We are responsible for how healthy we are. You know, we shouldn't just be sort of going into a doctor's surgery, dumping it on them and saying, right, sort me, because that's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. And I think people are aware of that. I feel like, you know, within the cafe, obviously we are seeing a specific community who come into Primal Roost, who come in and see us and do have a very good awareness. But within conversations that you have, you know, people are becoming more aware because it's out there, it's prevalent, it's in the news all of the time. People talking about health, talking about new ways to take your own health into your hands and diet and nutrition and how important these things are in terms of the longevity, even the NHS and things like that, that you know, we really take personal responsibility for these things. And it's, you know, an interesting time of year that we've, you know, we've chosen to do this lab today, about 2 weeks before the end of the new year. And it's prime time. Everybody is starting to get into their heads, right? New Year's upon us. I'm going to make changes. I'm going to, you know, better next year. It's the way forward. And I thought last year, I was really surprised at the difference in January with what you saw on the news that, you know, you don't see do this diet, do that diet. They were all, everything that was coming out was saying the same thing wrapped up in a different package. It was eat less sugar. Eat less processed foods, stay away from gluten, stay away from your processed carbs, everybody is saying the same thing. The message is starting to infiltrate, isn't it?
Okay.
Can I just
interrupt you, ladies, there? I've actually had a question from a member of the audience. So if I put that up on the screen, perhaps one of you could answer that.
Yeah, so that's a very good question, actually, because the paleo movement, some people call it primal, some people call it paleo. But the paleo movement is really focused around foods that we feel that genetically we were probably designed to eat. Now, I have a lot of clients who are paleo but don't like meat. And therefore, there are a lot of people that follow a more vegan style of eating but try and maintain it to be paleo. Now, that is more difficult because of the amount of protein that you can get from eating meat. But yes, paleo people would generally eat meat, but you don't have to. And there are ways around it. And there are now actually quite a few vegan paleo books. I mean, Dr. Mark Hyman, who's one of the leading guys in the Institute of Functional Medicine, has phrased a term called PGAN, which is paleo vegan. And what he doesn't mean is that you don't eat any meat, but he's saying, you know what, actually, one of the main problems is that most of us don't actually eat enough vegetables. So if you are eating meat, you actually need to be supporting that with at least half a plate full of veg. So right. Yes, to answer your question, you do normally eat meat, but you don't have to.
Okay. And there's another question there. If you won't mind answering that. So basically, I quit alcohol, meat and sugar because of bad gout, and I'm on 5 meds and still suffer daily. Any suggestions?
Gosh, you know, gout is such a painful form of arthritis, and it is a form of arthritis. One of the things that is normally recommended, you're absolutely right about the alcohol, meat and sugar. So absolutely. There are also some other purine-rich foods. And purine is a compound found in certain foods that can or has been shown to contribute to gout. But the main thing that seems to be now in the research regarding gout is fructose. So fructose is a form of sugar, but it's found in, obviously, fruit juices, smoothies and so on. And it's normally now recommended that you keep your fructose level down. The one exception is cherry. Yeah, someone's just mentioned that. Cherry Active. Cherry Active is actually a brand. So it doesn't have to be Cherry Active, but it needs to be the Montemanseri cherry. And this is a sour cherry. And there have been a lot of really good studies on the sour cherry and reducing gout. Turmeric is great because it's an anti-inflammatory. So we often recommend anti-inflammatories. The other thing to really think about is general detoxification, because often there is a build-up when you have gout. So we would often recommend, you know, some liver support, some kidney support to really help with general detoxification. Some people take certain supplements that are designed for that, or milk thistle or super green powders. But actually, I would say, you know, the beer. Smoked food is also one to look out for. Red meat in particular. Poultry should be okay. And fructose. So I wouldn't do dried fruit, for example, either.
What about general fruit? He was mentioning that is fruit bad? So all fruits, stay away from all fruits with the fructose?
No. And obviously, I've mentioned the sour cherry. Which I would still keep in. What I would say is stick to the lower fructose fruits. So that would be the citrus. So lemon, satsumas this time of year, fantastic. Oranges, berries as well. Pomegranate, probably. Blueberries, things like that. But maybe just 2 portions a day, no more than that. And watch. You said you're on meds, so you need to watch what supplements you're taking, because they may contraindicate what you're already taking. But, you know, just be careful that any supplement is not a contraindication for the medication that you're under. But I do appreciate the pain that you're under. I've got a lot of clients with gout and it's horrible.
And are raisins quite high in sugar? Because you're saying I've been eating a lot of raisins. Is that?
Yeah, I wouldn't do dried fruit. It's very high in fructose.
Okay. Remove the sugar, tell not to eat fruit. It is hard to cut out that sweetness, isn't it?
Okay, so yeah, so sorry for interrupting you there with those questions. Great questions, no, by the way, from the audience. Thank you very much. So did you want to move on, Jodie?
Yeah. No, one of the things I'd like to, we were just talking about with the with New Year's trends. What do you think we're going to see for this year, Christine? What do you think is going to be?
Yeah. I mean, this is the sort of time of year for Pete. I always recommend to my clients, take a step back and have a look at your key health issues. But in terms of, say, food trends and health trends, we know that fermented foods is probably going to maintain a really big issue. The research, and when I mean fermented foods, I mean things like sauerkraut, raw sauerkraut, kimchi, kefir, yogurt, but proper yogurt, not shop-bought sugary stuff, kombucha. All of those contain beneficial bacteria and certain beneficial yeasts, and they can help to maintain a good population of bacteria in our gut. Why is that important? Because 75% of your immune system is in your gut. Yeah. Your gut bacteria are involved in immune modulation. So if you've got an inflammatory disorder like gout, or you've got a lowered immune system, or you've got an injury because you're an athlete, you need good beneficial bacteria. They're important for processing our vitamins and minerals. They generate things like B vitamins, vitamin K, which is great for the bones and the heart. They can influence our mood. They actually help process food, and including sugars. They help with bowel health. They help with regularity. I mean, the list goes on. And there's going to be a lot more research about the role fermented foods can have on our overall health. So I think fermented foods will still become another big area.
Yeah.
I still think, although there's no legislation around superfoods and the word superfoods, I still think that people are going to be looking much more carefully about the nutrient density of the food that they eat. So forget empty calories, you know, look at what is it that that food's giving me. And I think there's going to be more emphasis on low sugar, higher fat.
Yeah.
And including healthy fats like the monounsaturated found in avocados, olives, nuts and seeds and so on. I think there's going to be a wealth of people wanting what we call it functional food. I mean, it's just real food, but food that has a reason for, you know, a purpose. So, you know, things that might have, you know, added seeds, added protein. Protein will still be big.
Yeah.
You know, protein for everyone is big. You know, it's not just the people that go to the gym. Protein is really important generally. So I still think those are going to be important as well. Yes, the new year is often associated with detoxification and cleansing. There's nothing wrong with that at all. Just don't go on some maple syrup diet fad. If you want to support detoxification, you have to give your liver the right nutrients to actually function, and that includes protein and certain key vitamins and minerals.
Do you know, I think a lot of people kind of look at the new year and they do their detoxification, they do their week long, their month long, whatever it is they're going to do, but then how do you make this sustainable? How do you not make these changes that in another 11 months time you're going, I'm right back where I was?
Yeah. So one of the things that they've shown, particularly with the sort of the wealth of gym goers January the 1st, is that it has to become part of a general routine day in, day out. So whatever change you do, don't make it so ridiculously hard you are going to give up. Yeah. It has to become a regular part of your day. So, you know, a lot of people I say to, you know what, just make one change in your diet. Just one change. It could be that you start eating breakfast and you never have. It could be that you make yourself a simple green smoothie every day. And you set yourself up with that mentality. This is going to be a good day because I've already started well. You go to the gym, you know, whatever it is that you want to do, just make it one change. Don't say, I've got to change absolutely everything in my diet, because that won't happen. Yeah. And the other thing that a lot of people do, and I think this is a really good idea, is do a store cupboard clear out. Chuck out the sugary biscuits, the crisps, whatever it is that is your sticking point, chuck it out. Because if it's not in the house, you are less likely to pop round to the local shop late at night to get it because you can't be bothered. Mm. And instead, make sure you've got a load of healthier snacks ready prepared in the fridge. So whatever you like, whether it's nut butters, whether it's olives, cherry tomatoes, hummus, avocado, have it prepared so that you don't, again, have to think about, oh, I can't be bothered to create that. I'm just going to eat anything or go out and get a takeaway. Yeah. If it's ready prepared, you are more likely to eat it and stick to it.
Yeah.
So don't put unnecessary burdens on you, because most people are stressed to the hilt, and the last thing they need is all these rules and regulations that they have to do. And if they don't, they think, oh, stuff it. I'm going to do nothing because I'm clearly failed already. Yeah. Make it achievable. That's the key.
Most of us are creatures of habit. If you look at what you eat over the course of a week or a couple of weeks, most of us rotate the same foods day in and day out. So on a regular weekly basis, your diet and your meal plan probably looks the same. And I always tell people in the shop, make planned leftovers. Make your life easy. Trying to figure out, what am I going to eat for lunch? Lunches are so hard because I have to go to the office, I have to work, or I need to pack school lunches for the kids. Make planned leftovers. If you're making a meal, you know this is healthy, double it.
Absolutely. And again, that's easy, isn't it? That's an easy option. And what a lot of people do now, particularly, I mean, I've got three boys. Do you know our food bill is just up the roof because they're eating all the time? So what I will do is I will make double, triple batches and freeze it.
Yeah.
So that, you know, we've always got something. So when they come home and they're absolutely starving, there's always something that's, you know, nutritious available.
I have a question, if that's okay. Would you advocate the use of, say, a slow cooker or something like that?
Slow cookers.
And pressure cookers. Pressure cookers are fantastic.
Yeah, and I think they will probably make a comeback. You know, I mean, I remember when I was young, my mum would use the pressure cooker to make the stock from the roast, that, you know, the day before or whatever. And, you know, students, I remember being a student, and using a slow cooker because you would just stick it on and you'd come home and it'd all be ready. Yes. So, I agree that slow cookers are a really good option for when time is short.
My grandma used to have one.
Pressure cookers are great because my biggest thing is often I come home from work, I've gotten something out from the freezer, like braising steak or something that's a, you know, a cut of meat that really needs to be slow cooked. And I'll walk to the door at 4:30 and think, oh, I haven't done anything with it.
Yeah,
you can do a slow cooked meal basically in an hour.
So yeah,
it's not on my Christmas list because I don't believe in appliances for Christmas. It'll be on my Boxing Day shopping list.
But I mean, you know, in terms of prep, you know, I mean, I've just been speaking to a client this morning, and she said, "You know what? I hate cooking, Christine. I hate it." And so, you know, one of the things now is that, you know, there is actually in the supermarkets a lot of good stuff that is healthier, that is, you know, easier to prepare. So, you know, one of the cheapest things to do is to make use of eggs. You know, if you're you come home and you're starving, just a simple omelette is a really easy thing to do. A lot of my clients will use bags of frozen vegetables and quickly steam those. They are very nutritious. You know, bags of prepared salad, you know, all right, it's not ideal, but I'd rather you did that than, you know, go down the local chippy.
What works really well as well is buy things like mince in bulk. Instead of a mince to make a spaghetti bolognese, just brown up and cook a whole bunch of mince and leave it in the fridge. And you can use it for tacos. You can do it in a stir fry. You can do it in a spaghetti bolognese. But just having it pre-cooked means you can whip together a meal in about 10 minutes from all the fruit and veg that are in your fridge or your freezer.
Yeah, exactly. And bulk it out as well. You know, if you're worried about the cost of meat, you can bulk it out with, you know, a bag of frozen chopped vegetables, for example, or a couple of tins of kidney beans or something, you know, or lentils or whatever. So, you know, you can make it cheaper, and you can get things like turkey mince now. If you want it lighter and you don't want so much red meat, you know, you can use lighter meats to do the same thing. And don't forget, you know, canned fish is a really good kitchen staple, store cupboard ingredient. You know, things like mackerel, sardines, you're going to get your omega-3s, and, you know, you can eat it out of the tin if you want. It's cheap and it's healthy. So there are certain things that, you know, yes, they have been processed to some extent, but they are great store cupboard ingredients that will not break the bank as well. Because again, in January, a lot of people are thinking, you know what, I need to cut back because I've spent too much.
Oh yeah, God, my wife has. That's for sure.
Now, I don't mean to go backward, but one of the things that we did very briefly mention was gut health and fermented foods. Mm. And I think it's really important to mention about fermented foods because, again, people get into January, they jump in, you know, 2 feet, you know, I'm all ready to go for this. But fermented foods isn't something that you should literally just start wolfing down, is it? You kind of need...
Yeah. So, I mean, so fermented foods, and I'm not talking about alcohol here. You know, we're talking... Because I say that to my clients. They think, Christine, you're telling me to drink a bottle of red wine? No. So you do need to be a little bit careful, depending on the state of your health. Because remember, I see clients that are really healthy and want to optimize their health, or maybe professional athletes or whatever. But I also see people that are chronically ill. So they have serious autoimmune conditions, serious cancer, serious, you know, so they're not always suitable to eat in large amounts straight away. What they do is obviously when you eat them, you're going to re-inoculate your gut with beneficial bacteria. Now, they potentially will crowd out some of the other bacteria. And as a result, they can make you a little bit gassy, a little bit bloated, a little bit windy initially. So for some people, they... You know, initially it might be just a couple of days. They might feel, a little bit bloated, and then that should ease. But that's why we always say, just start off with a tablespoon of sauerkraut. See how you get on. The only people that it might not be a good idea for in particular are if you know you've got a reaction to something called histamine, which is a compound that is naturally present in quite a lot of foods, and we can generate it by eating certain foods. And histamine can be quite inflammatory in the sense that, so histamine is associated with hay fever, you know, that sort of runny eyes, that itchy soreness. And it can also create hives on the body. So if you are someone who knows I react to histamine, then things like sauerkraut and fermented foods may not necessarily be always the best choice for you. You may be all right with yogurt, but probably not sauerkraut.
Now, when you're saying yogurt, are you saying homemade then?
Ideally homemade, yes, because the studies on a lot of the shop-bought stuff really doesn't back up that they contain an awful lot of beneficial bacteria. That's not true of all of them. There are some, you know, good organic ones that may be, you know, fairly beneficial. And obviously not everyone's got time to make their own yogurt, but it is fairly straightforward. I mean, you can actually do it in a thermos flask, but a lot of people buy very cheaply from Lakeland, and I'm sure you can get it from elsewhere, a little yogurt maker, which you just plug in and you heat up your milk or your coconut milk or your almond milk or whatever milk you're using. You cool it down. You then add a starter. That could be a packet starter. It could be a little bit of fresh yogurt to start it. And then you put it in your electric yogurt maker or your thermos flask, and you just leave it to ferment, and the beneficial bacteria will just grow. Okay. And you leave it ideally for 12 hours. Sometimes people do it 24 hours, and that will then be nice and rich in the beneficial bacteria, and then you keep it in the fridge.
Okay.
And so it doesn't take long to make.
And if you're avoiding dairy, that's still...
No, if you're avoiding dairy, go for coconut yogurt, which you can make from canned full-fat coconut milk. You could use other milks as well, but I generally find coconut, especially full-fat coconut, gives a really nice creamy yogurt. And that's the one that I tend to do here for the boys who don't eat dairy.
Oh, excellent. That sounds really good. So with moving forward, so we at Primal Roots, for example, are a paleo primal cafe. But yep. I try really hard not to make sure that it's not a pigeonhole, because... Like, none of us believe that actually the paleo or the primal lifestyle is necessarily the way to go forward in terms of every individual.
Yeah.
I think, and as we've been discussing here, you've just talked about histamine, so it may not suit certain people to go to fermented foods.
Yeah. So
actually, the way forward with health, with whether it be New Year's, whether it be just how you're going to look at your health, is really about taking a personalized approach in moving forward. Mm. It's about looking at, what does my body react well to? What are my specific issues? And what are the things that I should avoid? What are the things I should include in order to optimize my own health?
Does that? Yeah. And again, I think this may well be more of a trend that you know, is discussed more and more. And it's already hit, you know, I mean, it was even on Channel 4 the other day, Radio 4 rather, and that is DNA, genetics, SNP testing, personalizing your diet according to the genes that you have and being able to switch genes on and off. And without getting too technical, you can actually know from genetic testing, which is just a saliva test, what genes you've inherited and therefore how well you, you know, handle fat, how well you handle protein, how well you handle sugar. And, you know, I use it a lot in my clients. I use it for people who may have a family history of certain diseases. I use it a lot for athletes because there are certain genetic SNPs that are associated with endurance sports. Some are associated with power. Some are associated with good recovery. Some are associated with more inflammation. And if you know that about your own body, then you can tailor your diet accordingly. So, you know, some people may not actually handle saturated fat very well. And therefore, they would be better switching to more olives or seeds or oily fish or avocado. So, you know, you're quite right that one size does definitely not fit all. And some people thrive on more of a meat-based diet. Other people thrive on a vegan vegetarian diet. You know, there isn't one diet that you can absolutely say will always suit someone. What we do know is that processed sugary food doesn't suit anyone.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have any beneficial nutrients at all. But apart from that, you can tweak your diet according to what really suits your genetics.
Yeah, I completely agree. And obviously, I've seen you, Christine, and I've had some testing and stuff done purely out of curiosity, wanting to know how I can optimize my health. But is this something that is ever really going to be available to the masses? It's something that at the moment, it's not something that the NHS offers. So how is this something that can spread to the greater public and actually be used in the general public's healthcare?
I think some of the problem is there are tests that are available via the websites. What isn't really available is the expertise in interpreting those. So actually anyone could Google and probably order a test online.
Yeah.
And get a load of, you know, SNP results, probably not understand it and maybe misinterpret it. But I do think that, you know, if we had this conversation in another few years, I think because the research is being done on these SNPs, I think we would be a lot more focused on individual diets for your own SNPs, your own genetics. I mean, we do know, I mean, the GPs will do certain genetic tests, but those are ones that are perhaps associated very specifically with certain diseases. The SNPs that I'm looking at are associated with your predisposition of getting certain health conditions. It's quite different types of testing that we're doing. But so, for example, celiac disease, the doctor can test you genetically to see whether you inherit the genes for celiac. Now, that doesn't tell you, are you celiac? But it does tell you, do I actually have the genes associated with celiac disease? Now, that could be important if you've got a family history of it, of course.
Yeah.
So that those sort of tests are now available widely from the GP.
Yeah. Oh. Excellent. Well, it's a good point to start. Here's my doorbell. It's a good point to start. If you don't have access to something like that, just by doing something like a simple elimination diet, if you don't have that specific detail to hit.
Yeah.
General public or?
No, I mean, I would say that could be quite dangerous because I have experienced people that have come to me doing something like that and ended up very nutritionally deficient because they've taken loads of foods out. They still don't feel any better because they haven't actually identified their underlying cause and now feel they can't eat anything because everything makes them ill. And what's happening is they're actually depriving themselves of key nutrients that the body needs to thrive. So I would say if you are concerned, then get yourself properly tested and see someone who's qualified to take you through something that will be nutritionally sound for you to follow.
Excellent. That makes sense. Well, I have a specific question from one of our customers who's come into the shop who unfortunately isn't able to join us today. And so it was a question that's well outside of my remit. I was very interested because she has been to the doctors. She has a six-year-old daughter.
Okay.
This is a very graphic one. I'm very sorry for everybody who's joining in. She has a six-year-old daughter who for about 2 years now has been having really, really loose stools.
Okay.
And they've gone to the doctors. They've run tests, any basic tests that I guess they would think to run on them. Nothing's coming back. And she can't see any specific correlation to specific foods as to what's causing it. But this poor little girl, she's in school full time and it's not particularly pleasant for her. She doesn't have any stomach pain of any sort. Fizzy drinks cause it to get much, much worse. They just don't know what to do. They haven't tried eliminating any specific foods. They haven't been told to eliminate any specific foods. And they're kind of, the doctor's kind of said, well, no, nothing's turned up, so it's all good.
Okay, so I mean, obviously, without knowing exactly what tests they've done, there's a certain few things that have come to mind. And I see a lot of children in my clinic with these sort of conditions. And certainly there are some things that you can test for that would be worth eliminating before you start going on a restrictive diet. So lactose intolerance, you can test for. Fructose intolerance, you can test for. I have one girl and she was going to the toilet 13 times a day. And it turned out that she was fructose intolerant. We took the high fructose foods out, resolved it overnight. So fructose and lactose intolerance, you can test for. There is potential that she may have a gut infection. So that could be a bacterial overgrowth, yeast, or parasite. All of those can cause diarrhea. I think that's less likely because normally you would get you'd get pain, you might get bloating as well, but it may be worth doing what we call a comprehensive stool test with parasitology. That has to be really a three-stool collection in order to really make sure that you pick anything up. And a lot of people say, well, she's so young, would she have one? Yes, I have seen children younger than that with various parasites, various bacteria, Helicobacter pylori. It's incredible what people can pick up. And if there are signs and symptoms, then we need to address it. The other one, of course, is celiac disease, because one of the symptoms in young children is diarrhea and weight loss.
I did try to get hold of her this morning to get to see if she remembered the specific test. She said, I couldn't remember the test that they've run. We went to the doctors. They ran tests and that was kind of as good as she could give me. Would these have been ones that they would have likely have done? Would these be your initial?
No, lactose and fructose, you normally get referred to a gastroenterologist to do a breath test. Those are often breath tests. The celiac is a blood test, so they would have done that. Bear in mind, however, it's not the most reliable of tests. It will miss some people. We tend to use a company called Cyrex, C-Y-R-E-X, Cyrex. They are the leading lab in the whole world. They are American-based. They're the leading lab for gluten sensitivity, non-celiac gluten sensitivity testing, autoimmune diseases, and other food allergies. They are blood tests, and they are very, very rigorous. So that is another option, because I have seen people where they've been told that gluten is fine for them. We've run the Cyrex test and gluten is absolutely not fine for them. And it's just because the sensitivity of the Cyrex test is much greater than a celiac blood draw. But it's a good place to start. So you would always want to go to the GP. And if you don't get anywhere, ask for a referral to a gastroenterologist who should then be able to do some of these more in-depth tests. Very occasionally, there will be an issue with bile flow, but it's very unlikely in a very young child. You're more likely to have an intolerance, particularly if it seems to be worse with certain foods. She could also be reacting to certain sweeteners. Because your comment about fizzy drinks may be something to do with what's in them, a sweetener that she can't process, that she can't actually digest properly. But those would be the ones I would always start with.
She did ask me if kombucha would be good to try with her. I honestly don't tell her.
No, I honestly wouldn't. One of the things that may be beneficial is, you know, to watch how much, this is one of the few cases where you wouldn't want them having too much high fiber foods, which might actually aggravate the gut. And instead, there is a supplement called, it's a probiotic yeast called Saccharomyces boulardii. And this has actually been studied in research journals for reducing the amount of diarrhea.
Okay.
So it's, again, it's not necessarily resolution, but it's a very good one to re-inoculate the gut. Now, if she's got very extensive diarrhea, then she just needs to also watch her loss of electrolytes, because if she, I mean, it depends how bad it is.
Yeah.
But I see clients with Crohn's disease, and that, you know, they're rushing to the toilet all the time, and we know that they will be low in potassium, magnesium, sodium, and zinc.
Yeah.
And so she may want to ask to be tested for those, or to focus on foods that are rich. So coconut water, bananas for potassium. Bananas are actually quite good for diarrhea anyway. And zinc rich foods. So certain nuts and seeds, meat and seafood, they will be very useful for replacing potential loss. And again, they've done studies on children who have lots of diarrhea, and they are often low in zinc. It's one of the ones we excrete out very quickly.
Okay. Ladies, we are actually coming to the end of our broadcast. We could talk about this all day long. We have had one other question from the audience. Are you happy to take that?
Of course.
Yeah, okay. Let me put that up on the screen for you. So it says, I'm late into the broadcast, but where does one begin on discovering the right nutrition for yourself? I think that's actually a really good question.
Carmen, that's a very, very good question. I mean, you know, I would say this, wouldn't I? You know, you could see someone that's qualified, or there are some brilliant books out there. I mean, I've written loads. There's a couple that might be of relevance to you. One is called The Functional Nutrition Cookbook, which sort of takes you through all your own body systems and gives you little questionnaires to ask you, so you can find out which areas of my body might need a bit more support. And another one is called Eat to Get Younger. Again, a very good one. Both of those are very evidence-based, so they're based on research. So they might be a good place to start. I've got loads of nutrition blogs on my website, which again are evidence-based, and that might be a good place to start as well.
Okay, I've shared Christine's website in the comments there. Jodie, was there anything you wanted to add before we wrap this up?
Oh, goodness. Books that you're looking for anybody who is UK-based, Christine's books are available in our shop at Roost, which is in Bagshot in Surrey. And Christine also has a new book coming out in, is it January that it's going to be out?
I have two books coming out. One's called The Supercharged Green Juice and Smoothie Diet, which is 1st of January. So, you know, for people that want to clean up their diet, it's a good one. And then the Gut Health book, which has actually been endorsed by Dr. Mark Hyman and the Institute of Functional Medicine, that's coming out sort of April, May. And that's all about resolving gut problems for good.
And are those books available on your website, Christine?
Yeah, available Amazon website, you know, all the booksellers. So they're widely available.
I would recommend to the audience that you follow Primal Roost on Facebook and Christine Bailey on Facebook, because they're always great sources of information. Also, not sure if people are aware of this, but Primal Roost have their own podcast channel on iTunes, as does Christine. Definitely worth a follow, you know, for really good nutritional information. Jodie, was that it, or are you happy to wrap up?
For today, guys, I think we've I could talk forever.
Yeah, we will be sticking around for a couple of minutes once Jodie stops the recording, if anybody else has any questions. So well done, ladies, and well done to you, Jodie, on hosting your very first blab. You did brilliantly. It was really good. And can't wait for more.
Participated. It's been great, and really enjoyed it, and hopefully everybody's gotten a bit of information from it. And you'll be able to find this as well on our website. You'll be able to find the recording and on the YouTube channel for anybody who wants to listen to the replay.
Yeah.
So fantastic.
Thank you very much.
Brilliant.
Right. Well, signing off, guys. We will be available, as Paul said, we'll be available for probably about another 5-10 minutes afterwards. So please feel free to keep some questions coming if anybody wants to ask anything else. But have a lovely Christmas, and we will see you all on our next episode. Speak to you guys soon. Bye.